15th year in the league. It never gets old, especially, you know, being out of work for 4 months. You know, perspective kind of changes a little bit. You know, back when you were young, you were like, man, why we got to go to OTA? Man, I wish I was home, man. And you sit on the couch for 4 months and it's like, man, I wish I was in OTA, man. You know, it's good dropping the kids off and it's good, you know, picking the kids up from school, but I want to go to work. I'll go to work. And, you know, the Washington Redskins called me, a month and a half ago and started talking and agreed to come here to Washington about a week and a day ago, and here I am. So excited to be here.
You can tell Von Miller's been in the league a long time and is an older guy, almost 40.
Yeah.
Because the Redskins called him. Not the Commanders, the Redskins. What are you doing to protect your family's assets? The exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm Condori in Murad, can help you to draft a last will and testament, set up a living trust, or put together a medical power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. The Von Miller press conference today, and I'm not a big fan of playing press conferences unless it's breaking news, significant, live, breaking, developing news that we need to hear on the show. I think we can kind of cut things down, play clips, and react. That's kind of my philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I almost think we should play the Von Miller presser today. I texted Darius as much while listening to it in real time because it was one of the best introductory press conferences just in terms of coming off, owning the room, really funny, high energy, great answers, smart answers, thought-provoking. Mm-hmm. Like, he just crushed it. You can tell, I mean, Von Miller is actually a guy who has studied Billy Beane in the offseason a couple of times because he wants to be a GM one day. And he's been in the league for many, many years now as a near 36-year-old edge rusher. He's been around the block. This is just the next stop for him on a journey that will ultimately and eventually result in him being enshrined in Canton in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I don't know if it's his last stop, but it's a stop. But I just thought he killed it. I mean, he was so good today. All I thought about was like, this guy could do any media job he wants to do when he's done.
Yeah, there it is. Like, people eating out of the palm of his hand by the end of it. You could just, a guy that's that savvy, that's that sharp, not to mention, kind of to his point, he understands he's not Von Miller of 10 years ago. Who's who they were 10 years ago? I don't, you know, nobody is. But he gets it, that he still has something to offer, and it was the perfect marriage right here. And you came away just loving the guy. He was so awesome.
I now know why when we got Ryan O'Halloran on, who had covered him in two cities,
yep.
When I've heard Nikki Javala talk about him in the past, who covers the Commanders now, but had previously covered him with the Denver Broncos. I now know why they talk about Von Miller the way they do. Like O'Halloran, when he was on our show last week,
said, raved about him.
One of the best guys in a locker room that he's ever been around. One of the most media savvy, media relatable guys that you can find. And I think what he said is beloved. Like maybe the most popular teammate he's ever covered in terms of just people having nothing but good things to say about someone. And I totally get it now. What's not to like,
yeah,
in terms of him at
him,
the podium?
You know, doing post-game stuff before, heard him in locker rooms or different things, sound bites that make your way across NFL Network, ESPN or whatever. And I always go, I admired him from afar. Good player who seems to have a good head on his shoulders.
Here's how old he is. I was covering the team at the Combine when he was there to get drafted out of A&M. I remember being at his NFL Combine press conference in Indianapolis.
Wow, how about that?
Back when I was on the beat. So, yeah, this is a long, illustrious career. Now, again, I always say, because someone's listening in their car going, oh, come on. I mean, yes, he's had some transgressions and gotten in some trouble off the field or whatever. People that judge everyone by the worst decisions and the worst days and the worst thing they've ever done, allegedly, or had done, or in situations they've been in, if that's your prerogative, that's fine. It's just not how I operate. And I think good people are in bad situations and occasionally do bad things, and bad people can be in good situations and do good things and vice versa. But to me, what I know of him, just from in the last week, asking around, talking to players, talking to coaches, talking to front office people around the league, everybody loves this dude. And he steps up to the mic, and it's the best introductory press conference I've heard in years. Now, I will say the last amazing introductory press conference in Washington lore for me in Ashburn goes to Mark Sanchez. Mark Sanchez, who only would play one football game, I think Washington lost like 40-7 or something like that, and who wouldn't start again for the team and would soon be in the broadcast booth.
Oh, no.
So I'm hoping for a better Von Miller run on the back end of this press conference than the Mark Sanchez run.
More than one game.
But yeah. Do you remember the Sanchez Q&A?
Yes.
I think we played it on the show because it was just like so damn
like
good.
He, I mean, he's basically doing like Night at the Apollo. Like it was a 30-minute Comedy Central stand-up set. He was incredible.
I don't remember the specifics. Who does? He got brought in like the week before as a backup and then for some reason had to start. Where he was getting brought in midweek to start. I think it was, he was around for a few days, something happened, and then he had to start. Because it was that run of injuries where, like,
right. They were on their fourth or fifth
guy. McCoy went down, and somebody else goes down. Yeah, and so next thing you know, Mark Sanchez has been there for 5 days, and he's getting the nod to be the starting quarterback. And he had to step up to the podium on a Wednesday before a Sunday game. And I was like, if he plays half as good as that press conference was, Washington by a million.
It was the Alex Smith, obviously gruesome injury.
Right, then McCoy.
Then McCoy. Then was it Josh Johnson before Sanchez? Or Sanchez before Johnson?
Johnson started and won a game in Jacksonville. This would have been after that. Was it the same year that Josh Johnson started?
Same year.
Okay. Then I would say it was after that. No, you might have been before that, honestly. I know Josh Johnson was mid-December. Maybe they had two in the building, went to Sanchez. That went horribly, so they went to Josh Johnson.
I think that maybe
would happen. From what I'm seeing, it looks like he was signed to back up McCoy. And then
that makes more sense because they kept two. Whoever their OC was at the time, would it have been Kevin O'Connell? Knew him, I think, from New York or something. There was a link.
Matt Kavanaugh?
Okay. Was that the Bill Callahan time frame?
Yeah, so this is 2018. So post, no, this is still Jay. So Jay, they go 7-9.
That was before Jay got fired. That was the year Jay got fired.
No, 2019 Jay got fired.
So then it's Jay. We got to get Jay on the horn to talk about Mark Sanchez.
Yeah. It's Jay Matt Kavanaugh. Defensive coordinator was?
What the hell was Jay doing?
Defensive coordinator was?
Joe Barry.
No.
After that?
Yep.
2018
defensive coordinator was?
One of Chris Russell's guys. Who was that?
No, that was way after Jim. That
was before. Post Hazlitt. Went from defensive coordinator to like college position coach.
Oh, Greg Minuski.
That is correct.
Oh boy,
it was like a liaison to the scouting department at Kentucky.
Yeah, the assistant linebacker tape labeler.
So okay, that makes sense. So they kept two quarterbacks. Colt ends up being elevated to be the starter. Now you need to call someone off the street. Mark Sanchez was the call. Then Colt immediately got hurt because Colt always immediately got hurt the second he got an opportunity. And then Mark Sanchez goes, whoopsie daisy, I'm about to start in an NFL game. But that presser was a 10 out of 10. I'm here to tell you, Von Miller today, better than Mark Sanchez was then. That was a 9.7 out of 10. Today was a 9.8. We should play that at 6 o'clock for people that may not have heard it. So come back if you've got things going on, but you'll hear Von Miller's presser today. It was just good. He was talking about why he wears number 24. He had this really good answer. He goes, like, dude, I've only worn two numbers. It's not that serious. You know, for so many people,
I know
it's the biggest deal. He said, I wore 58 my entire time in Denver. I went to L.A. and someone had 58. He just doesn't seem like a guy that's going to buy a number or ask for a number. He said, then I wore 40 with the Rams and the Bills. I came here, 58's taken, which is Jordan McGee. 40's taken, which I think is Tyler Owens, who's like a roster hopeful safety.
Right.
So if you're Von Miller, you could pretty easily just go to either one of those two guys. I'm pretty sure McGee would also play ball, even though he was a draft pick last year. But Owens was an undrafted free agent who was a special teams guy. You go to either of them and go, hey, bro.
Hey.
I'm about to sign you. My name is Von Miller. You'll be seeing me inducted into the Hall of Fame in a few years. There aren't any of your jerseys other than hanging in your parents' closet. I'm going to take that jersey from you if you don't mind, and I'll give you $10,000 for your troubles. He didn't want to do that. He's like, guys already had that jersey. Those are their jerseys. He said, I wore 5 in high school, and he wore 24 one time in his entire life because in college, him and a college teammate wore the number to honor a buddy of theirs that they previously had played with in high school who had been, I believe he said, paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically to honor him for one game in college, I'm sure they got fined or whatever happened because the NCAA sucks, but they wore the number 24. He said, between that, you know, this legacy of this player I played with in high school is important to me. fact that I love Kobe Bryant, the fact that Champ Bailey is my guy, yeah, and he wore 24 here. The number spoke to me. That's what I'm going to go with. But that kind of insight where you could have just said, Champ Bailey wore it. I had a buddy that wore it at one point. It's like very, very different answer. Thought it was awesome.
Right. When you just go, how come you picked 24? Thinking we're going to go down the line of, should defensive ends have the number 24? And he gives this, as you said, this like engaging, thoughtful story and meaning behind it. Just who thinks in that level of degree?
He also has the Josh Bell thing going. Like, have you ever heard Josh Bell talk? I know you have. He's been on the show.
Should be a college professor, that guy.
But not only that, that's not what I'm talking about. It's the sneaky, they're from Texas, and there's like this, like, kind of like this thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
Not as much as I'm making it, but there's way more.
It's
like
a subtle twang.
It's a subtle Texan, like, country sound. Oh, shoot. Josh Bell's got that more than you think.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear Von Miller talk, and you're like, all right, I'm Von Miller. I can't do the voice, but it's a little bit more of that than you're expecting when you hear him speak. But he was funny. He was talking about how, so far, he thinks his biggest challenge is going to be not gaining weight because he's coming from Buffalo where there weren't that many great food options. And he's just driving along. He's like, y'all got Korean barbecue here. You want Korean barbecue? Head on over to Annandale, buddy. You'll do all right.
Got a couple spots right there. A little Honey Pig action
You want to sit down at Honey Pig and have yourself some fun?
Mm-hmm.
But I liked him. I just enjoyed the press conference. Now, the question is how much game you got left. Last year, he was very effective. The number I keep coming back to, because for me it's the most important thing, is that Von Miller still had the fastest get-off of any edge rusher in the league last year. To me, that says he can still play. Adam Peters in his presser to kick off camp said he put on the tape and he was shocked with how good Von Miller still is. Now, that's a scout watching football, seeing things through a scout's eye that I'm not going to see when I watch football. But here's where analytics come into play. I can look up the number of how fast you get off on a stopwatch. I don't need a scout's eye to see that. I can see that it was number one in the NFL at your position, and that tells me that you still have some twitch, you still have some burst, you can still get up the field. Then you can look at pass rush win rate. I got multiple places to do it. ESPN's got a metric, PFF's got a metric. He was top 10 in both. So did he have 12 sacks? No, he didn't play enough. He talked about that too, by the way, this transition from, I used to be an all-down guy. I used to get to set moves up in the first drive that I would use again in the third drive. I would think about this early in games. The fourth quarter, I'm going to go to something I haven't gone to because the last three times in this exact sequence, I've done A, and now he's expecting A, so I'm going to counter with B. And that's how he operated. But he said, I had to change my whole existence in Buffalo, being used less. Now I'm just coming off the bench shooting threes. I've got to give you my best every single play. You could just tell he is a thinking man's player. And if he can give them the ability to close, it's going to be a win.
So you mentioned Billy Beane earlier as he's kind of studied Beane. And in the movie Moneyball, which we've referenced a lot lately, there's a great moment.
Brandon Beane I was talking about, GM of the Bills.
I apologize.
If I said Billy, my bad.
I was thinking of Billy because of that. But anyway, you're right, Brandon Beane. But Billy Beane in the movie Moneyball, played
by
Brad Pitt.
If he followed around Billy Beane in the A's front office.
Yeah, it's a B name with Beane in the back. Now I'm all futzed. Anyway, let me get the story out, damn it.
What about Beans from
Butter Bean?
Even Stevens.
And Mr. Beane.
Yeah.
So he follows around Billy Beane to talk to Brandon Beane. Anyway, so Billy Beane in the movie, there's a great come to Jesus moment that he has with the actor that plays David Justice. I don't know how real the conversation was, but it sounds like it was probably dramatized off something real. Where David Justice still views himself as a star, right? And the reality is the Yankees are paying for him not to play for them anymore, right? In this moment. So he's now an A, and Billy Beane is asking him, I want you for the player you are, not for the player you were. Because who you are right now is actually really useful to us.
We'll take it.
They've under-identified or they've missed what you could actually still do. Here's what we're doing. Here's how we're doing it. You fit perfectly. I understand. Eyes wide open. There are two players on this team I think that fit this bill. I'm very aware that Deebo Samuel's not the same, 1,000-yard receiver, freight train superstar that he might have been a couple seasons ago. What he is better than what I had.
Yeah.
Same with Von Miller. I get that you're not 18-and-a-half sack Von Miller. If I was counting on that, I'd be a stupid, dumb idiot. You're not. What you are is the thing that he now understands that he is. And I think that's so valuable, right?
Well,
I'm not overpaying
this
for it.
Proclivity of closing, where like his biggest plays, when you look them up the last few years, because they kept him fresh, because he wasn't playing a ton, it's closing time, semisonic, brother. This is the fourth quarter. This is coming off the edge, sack fumble, you know, scooping up a fumble, having that energy in the legs at the end of a game. And it's where Washington, look up the numbers. This is not just me saying this. They were bad in these areas. You know, if you look at pass rush win rate in the fourth quarter of playoff games last year, he was single-handedly more productive in his playoff game time, which was, I think, two of them, than the three playoff games that Washington played with all of their edges collectively in terms of win rate, pressures, sacks, hits, quarterback, stuff like that. That's what they need him to bring. It's nice if he makes some plays in the first half, but if it's close, if we're trying to get off the field up three, if we're trying to salt a game away, I need one or two big plays a month, basically, from Von Miller. If he can give me those, then I got no problem. I'll go out and spend several million and upgrade. There is still the question of just the overall health of that position, where Dorrance Armstrong came on late last season, but still feels to me more like a secondary option than a star. And right now, he's your number one D end. Dietrich Wise seems like a really good dude. He held court today right off the field. And it's just a very likable guy, veteran. The Patriot way has been ingrained and injected into him, and bring as many of those guys over as you can. But that's not someone that's going to go out and get 10 sacks, right? You're trying to replace Dante Fowler. Miller can help you do that. I think late in games is where he's going to make his money, though. Let's talk to Eric Flack next. Flack works at Channel 9. He's been covering the stadium negotiation, and the huge news today is that a deal has been struck and a vote looms now on August 1st. Is it time to celebrate? Is this all just a technicality on still what is a much larger discussion that needs to be had, or is it over now? We'll ask Eric next on The Fan. All of our training camp coverage on 106.7 The Fan is presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenry'sWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. You're going to hear an interview from today's training camp workouts. Caught up with Jacory Kroski-Merritt, seventh-round running back, who's got a chance to make the roster. And I will say, it's very early, and until preseason games are played when backs are actually being tackled and trying to break tackles, there's no real reason to get overly excited about a running back, but I like the way he moves. I like the way he cuts. He looks the part. But you'll hear from Kroski-Merritt coming up at 5:45 on Grant and Danny today here on The Fan.
He certainly got the pulse of certain subsection of the fans. The idea of running backs or certain players, where there's this small sample, it's like it's so intrigued and so excited. I mean, I've lived through too many Marcus Masons and LaMichael Jameses and you know, guys that have some intrigue.
I think you're looking for
them.
Lake Seastrom.
Lake Seastrom, that's the one too. But like, there have been a number of guys that like everybody couldn't. They're like, oh, this is the dude. I hope so. I'm gonna wait to slam the gavel though, and not quite fit him for a gold jacket yet.
Let's go to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Eric Flack, the award-winning reporter at Channel 9, who's been all over the stadium saga as the city council's been trying to get an agreement in place with the Commanders. And Eric, it seems like that actually took place. We heard today from the chairman, Phil Mendelson, so they've got an agreement. There's a vote coming up on August 1st. Is it over? Should I be celebrating? Was this the proverbial touchdown, or is there still more surprises coming behind corners?
Yeah, I'm down here at City Hall, and I'll quote the mayor, who at a noon rally said, "When I struck the deal with the Commanders, I said we're at the one-yard line. Now we're at the half-yard line." Listen, what Chairman Mendelson negotiated was an amendment to the deal that Mayor Bowser had negotiated, which increases the amount of revenue that the city of Washington, D.C. is going to get from the stadium and the various taxes and money generated from the stadium itself over there. We always knew that this was going to be the end game. The question now is, has what Chairman Mendelson has negotiated satisfied the swing votes that he will need to go from the 5 votes that they have already in place in favor of this stadium agreement to the 7 they need to get the majority. So, you know, D.C. Council per se does not have a deal with the Commanders. Chairman Mendelson has a deal with the Commanders, but it is one of the biggest headlines is because he has a deal with the Commanders, which again is an updated version of the mayor's deal. There's now a vote scheduled for next Friday, a week from tomorrow, and that's when you celebrate. When they have, it will be a first vote, and they need a second vote. DC never does anything easy, but when that's when you celebrate next Friday when they get those, you know, extra votes, presumably, that they believe they're going to have.
What are the chances D.C. could D.C. this thing? I mean, it's my Linda Kropp corollary, Eric. I remember very well thinking it was done. I heard something very similar to this, and next thing you know, it wasn't. Now, that ended up happening, but even still, it was for, I don't know what, 24, 48, 72 hours. It was standing on the edge of a knife there, dude, for a while.
I remember. I don't think we're going to go down that road, but anything is possible in D.C. You got council member Robert White, Matthew Fruman, Christina Henderson, Janice Lewis-George, and Zachary Parker as undecideds. They only need 2 of those. Henderson, Fruman, you know, have both kind of indicated that they're going to, you know, vote in favor eventually. I think the frustration comes from a Fruman, a council member Fruman, who at this point is just complaining that things are moving too fast. And Mendelson, which is comical to you, this program and some others who think DC council has moved painfully slow with all this. And Mendelson faced a lot of questions as to what changed. You said you were going to drag this out. Now all of a sudden you're coming, you say you have an agreement, and he was quite honest in saying it wasn't Trump, it wasn't Comer, it was the team putting the pressure on us and saying, we need this done now. I think he just believed them, and he says they sweetened the pot to get the deal done. So you would need all 5 of the undecideds to hold out for various reasons. And my gut tells me that if they don't get all 5, they certainly will get 2, but I think they'll get all 5. But you never know.
Eric Flack of Channel 9. So this is similar in its, I guess, basis, the question. But my assessment was, I said this to Danny earlier, today doesn't happen if they don't know the vote's going to be a yes on the 1st. Like, why would they schedule a vote for the 1st with him striking this deal with these changes, and as a holdout, so to speak, he becomes a yes, if this isn't going to be a yes? And I guess that goes back to the fact, the clarification you said, which is that he negotiated a deal with the team, not the city council, which I thought the council did. Why is that how it works? Like, why does he negotiate the deal that a bunch of people could still say no to? So I guess that's part one of a two-parter. Isn't this a formality now that the vote is a yes? It seems like this was the hard part, and the vote happens after you get what you want, which they got.
Yeah, those undecideds were not part of this negotiation between Mendelson and the team.
Why?
And in recent, because welcome to D.C. Council.
I mean, that's just stupid.
Well, why don't you hop on down here after the radio program? We'll get it fixed. Mendelson complained about Mayor Bowser negotiating the terms of a deal unilaterally. And in recent week or two, there have been voices on D.C. Council who have criticized and shown frustration that Mendelson was now, you know, negotiating exclusively his own deal. The other side of that, to offer a serious answer to your question, Grant, is that the Commanders cannot negotiate with 12 people, 13 if you count Trayon White, but they cannot negotiate with 12 people. And that's ultimately what would end up happening if, you know, you literally had a negotiation that every single D.C. council member is a part of. And that's why you have a chair of the D.C. Council to run point on certain things like this. Mendelson believes he has the votes. I don't think it's a slam dunk. And I don't think that the deal that ultimately gets approved is even what Mendelson presented today. I think it probably changes again because that's just how these things work.
Before August 1st?
Well, that's the thing. Somebody said the debate, there's going to be a public hearing on Tuesday and Wednesday. Many people have asked, how are you announcing with big fanfare an agreement, a second agreement with the Commanders, when you were the one who said we needed transparency, talking about Mendelson, and we haven't even heard from the people yet. We haven't even had the public hearing yet. And his answer is, well, we've heard from people in other forms, in other ways. There is the vote isn't just come on in and vote. I mean, it can be. But the way it works is they say, hey, we're going to vote on this. And then one of those undecided says, you know, point of order, I have an amendment. And then they start talking, you know, the people give their opinions, and you could potentially, you know, amend the deal next Friday right here at DC Council. The question I had, and we kind of joked about this, does then somebody have a bat line to the Commanders and say, hey, is that cool? Can we change it like this? I mean, obviously they'll be here, but you know, if you change a deal in a debate, in a vote, that, you know, changes the terms the Commanders haven't agreed to, you know, I'm not sure that you still have an agreement with the Commanders. I think those are kind of the unknowns where we talk about the Linda Krupping it. That, you know, and that's why nobody, even down here today at the Wilson Building, even though it was a big, huge rally with the mayor claiming victory and lots of chants and tailgate Ted was here and the people were wearing jerseys. I mean, you know, most people are saying the real celebration comes when the vote is done. And we're not there yet.
Eric Flack with us here on Grant and Danny. So what was the biggest hurdle that had to be overcome? Like the thing that I guess was the hardest fought, hardest negotiation point, you know, toughest sticking point that ultimately seems to we've come to an accord now?
Money. We had talked a lot, and I think I've talked on this program about, you know, parking revenue. And, you know, one of the things that has added the cost of a game day experience to fans as a result of this deal is that there's going to be an 18% parking tax that's going to go directly to city coffers, and that's going to generate hundreds of millions of dollars. That parking tax wasn't in place yet. Some argue that it would have been in some form or fashion. Fans would have paid it. But it is a new tax. DC is getting sales tax revenue on merchandise and food and beverage. The Commanders are moving their front offices here, which are now currently in College Park. And there's a community benefits agreement. But the biggest one was that top line revenue. Mendelson claims he's bringing close to $800 million in new money to the city that wasn't there under Bowser's agreement. I think Bowser's people kind of question that behind the scenes. But at this point, I don't think they care anymore. I think they just want the vote done. But it was a money thing.
Eric Flack, Channel 9 award-winning reporter. Today, a significant step, but I guess it's not over just yet. So August 1st, that's when I throw my party?
I think yes, because, I mean, again, just to complicate things, there's a second vote in September, and the question that I am working on right now, and I don't have an answer for you, is the Commanders have always said if this thing bleeds into September, that's really, really going to impact our timeline of opening this deal in 2030. And, you know, the second vote is a formality. Pretty much because all the council members vote the same way. Nobody changes their mind between votes. But technically, it's done on the second vote, which isn't scheduled until September. And that's, you know, can the Commanders kind of start moving forward? But I think we can all breathe a sigh of relief. I think there will be a big celebration when next Friday. I think that's kind of like the celebration day. I kind of hearken it back to when Josh Harris bought the team from Dan Snyder. And there was like, remember the news broke and we celebrated. And then, it got approved. And there was like 8 different steps. And then finally there was that day where everybody went to the bullpen and got hammered and drank beers and got celebrated. I feel like that step is next Friday. I feel like that's the day where we can all breathe a sigh of relief. Stadium is approved.
And Josh Harris buys everyone a beer again. Eric, thank you, buddy.
You got it.
More beers. Let's go. Eric Flack, we love him. Great job. Channel 9, good reporting. Our double play is next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Remember, at 4 o'clock today, ahead of the Blitz, we got those Wiz Khalifa tickets. Someone's going to win. 5:45 today, Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt, the new running back, is going to be joining us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Driven by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Visit your local Washington area Honda dealer today.
Started the show with this, but it's worth kind of circling back to the passing of Hulk Hogan for folks that are, just kind of tuning in, or if it's, still something that's on your mind. Hard to quantify this. I think you said it very well in the first segment, GP, where it ultimately sometimes, I never met Hulk Hogan, obviously, but somehow it was a huge part of my life. And when someone like this passes away, it's hard not to kind of mark your own time. This is in the same week that another person that was a fixture in my childhood, Malcolm Jamal Warner from The Cosby Show. I watched his entire growth from, skinny adolescent into grown up. And, that was all part of this sitcom that I watched each and every week. It was before streaming, before you had anything on demand. It was you tuned in Thursday night at 8:30 when The Cosby Show was on, period, end of story. And I saw all of it. Same thing with Hogan. And now, as I'm have, my own kids are 11, 7, and then only a handful of months old. My 7-year-old is right around that same age and window. The things that he's really enjoying and liking and watching and becoming fans of and, is obsessed with or otherwise, that's how old I was, give or take, within a couple of years of when I discovered Hulk Hogan, like everybody else at school. And, somebody had to be Rowdy Piper. Someone had to be Volkoff or the Iron Cheek or George the Animal Steel or the Ultimate Warrior or whatever when we're at recess knocking each other's heads in. Just amazing, man. The rise in popularity, I don't think you could have stuff like that today just because of how many options there are, how inundated we are with kind of instant celebrity and the like. But you took a wrestler who became so much more than that, but he was still wrestling. Like, that's what he did 99% of the time. He was in movies and TV shows and played himself, here, there, and everywhere. But that crossover where the whole country went from not knowing who Hulk Hogan was to knowing and caring and obsessing over every movement, every appearance, every television interview, every Tonight Show. He was sitting there with Johnny Carson, weird, wild stuff, talking to Hulk Hogan. Like, what? A wrestler's on the Tonight Show like that, or Letterman, or otherwise. Amazing. Just absolutely an incredible rocket ship of stardom and fandom. The whole country was in love with the guy. It's unreal that he's gone, man. But, you can't help but mark the time.
I still can't believe he's 71 years old. Dave Meltzer is a writer, author, covered wrestling. I just keep going back to his tweet suggesting Hulk Hogan, the most famous wrestler ever. I think that's irrefutable. But he goes on to say, more people paid to see him perform over the course of his career than any other person. Now, I don't know if that is backed in fact, if that's even provable. It'd be hard to figure that out.
Yeah, I don't know how Taylor Swift compares to that, but if you think about,
This early in her career, probably not that well, but right. Give her another 40 years and maybe she could surpass him. But here's my point. Whether he's number one or he's number three or he's number seven, he is in that ballpark.
Yeah.
He is in that conversation, and for all we know, he could be number one. I mean, you referenced one event where there were 93,000 people. Taylor Swift's got to do 3 concerts and, a weekend in New Orleans to get to surpass that or something. But my point would be that's an event. This guy traveled the country.
200 shows a year. Yeah.
Weeks after weeks after weeks with the rare vacation where he's performing 2-3 times in front of packed houses, 17, 20, 22, 25,000 people arenas at different points, stadiums occasionally. There might be something to that. And I just think about the overall importance, pop culturally speaking, for Hulk Hogan. How many people have pictures with him? Like, I couldn't believe all the people I follow online, my social media feed, with their picture that time they met Hulk. I never did. One time at an amusement park when I was a kid, we got pictures with a guy we thought was Hulk Hogan. He was actually just a guy that was dressed up as and pretending to be Hulk Hogan, and I was six and I didn't know the difference. But that was the closest I ever got.
Mm-hmm.
But so many people met him. So many people were at events where he was or paid to go somewhere where he performed. And everyone's got a story. We took a call earlier today from someone who lived internationally. And I always talk about him as an icon in America. But his point was, no, he represented America in every country in the world in the 80s. When you thought of America, you thought of Hulk Hogan. Like, high on that list. Maybe it was like, I don't know, Reagan or whoever the president was comes to mind.
Then like 1A.
And then Hulk Hogan, which is quite a juxtaposition. This was one of his promos. This was the character that he created, Hulk Hogan.
But there are those right now that are questioning whether you can withstand the big man.
I don't care about those people, man. I don't care about those people that aren't star-craving Hulkamaniacs. I could care less what they think. I'm fighting for life, brother. I'm fighting for all those people that have remolded their lives, man. Modeled after Hulkamania. Get their priorities in order, man. Walk around with a lot of pride. As far as those people that are on Andre the Giant's side, I wish they'd come on down, too. I'd like to slap them around just for a warm-up. But I've already gone through my transformation, man. I'm ready for Pontiac, Michigan. I'm not the Hulk anymore. I'm the Hulkster, man. Look into my eyes, man.
Hulk,
I'm on that mountaintop. Back off, little man. I'm on that mountaintop, and I'm waiting for you, Andre. And I'm guarding that mountain. And the Hulkster that's guarding has got a 32-inch neck, a 64-inch chest, the largest arms in the world. And I'm geared to seek and destroy the cancer of Andre the Giant. Seek and destroy the Weasel's empire. And what you gonna do, Andre, in Pontiac, Michigan, when Hulkamania destroys you?
The largest arms in the world, the pythons. Oh, chills every time.
The Hulkster.
With Mean Gene Okerlund.
Runs you wild sleep. On you. Also one of the great walkout songs.
Yeah.
Ever. Give me, you give me his original theme that we played earlier. Juice that up a little bit.
Every corner of the ring, giving you the I need to hear you. It's like three little waves.
Yeah.
And then cup the ear. Next corner, three little waves, cup the air.
There's a turnbuckles.
Yeah.
He's going corner to corner.
Tear that tank top right off.
So,
I challenge you on to tear a tank top right now.
How many people, seriously, who are over 35 have ever torn a tank top and done the flex move? I think everyone's done that at least once.
Yeah. So I had like a tank top. I bought some like $6 terrible tank top in Florida. I needed one. It's a long story. But it like... the seam started to come apart and it cracked a little bit. Even still, I could barely do it. I'd like cut it with scissors and started. Then I put it under production, but that ain't easy.
How about when WCW was getting trounced by WWF and then Hulk Hogan saved the day one more time with NWO? Old New World Order?
The fourth man.
That's when I was cutting my teeth as a huge fan of the Attitude Era in WWF. Do you have New World Order, Darius, NWO? Hulk would come out doing that walk with Kevin Nash.
The strut and the
Scott Hall.
With those sunglasses.
I think Buff Bagwell was involved, maybe.
It feels right.
Buff the Stuff Bagwell.
That guy had some muscles.
Beltway Blitz comes your way next. We do have tickets to see Wiz Khalifa. In fact, we've got a pair of tickets two different times today at 4 o'clock and then at 5 o'clock when we're joined by Brooke Pinto of the D.C. City Council. We've got Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt, the running back with the Commanders, drafted in round 7, trying to make the roster from training camp. That's at 5:45 right here on The Fan.